51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. And we'll start with our three main films first. We'll be talking about the Bob Dylan documentary later in the programme. Tonight's three up for review are Men in Black International, the fourth in the Men in Black franchise, this time starring Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson. The latest real documentary from Asif Kapadia, which focuses on the footballer Diego Maradona. And We the Animals, a coming of age story of three close-knit brothers. And let's start with Men in Black International. And it's a running gag the whole way. I haven't said who's in studio with me, Justin McGregor and Gemma Cray. It's a running gag the whole way through this film that it's not just men in black. There are also women in black, Gemma. So you might explain that long running gag in this film, first of all.
I suppose, yes, it's a franchise. The Me Too movement has happened now. Time has been up, and officially there are now women in black. So Tessa Thompson does a great, does a service to her gender as not necessarily the first main woman, but she is Emma Thompson the most enthusiastic main character.
Emma Thompson had been an agent, I think, in Men in Black 3, hadn't she?
Yeah, so she was cast as a leader, and she's one of the familiar faces who's made it into this film as well. So she's the big boss. So actually, we first meet Molly, who is a young Tessa Thompson, when she is... She meets an alien in her bedroom when she's a small child, and then ever since then she's a bit of a tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist. She wants to find the men in black, makes it her mission, and then ultimately secures a role there. So she, her tenacity pays off.
Yeah, she's looking out the window at what should have been Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones wiping her parents' memory, but they didn't know that she was up in the bedroom, so her memory's not wiped and she remembers this.
And apparently there's a range limit on those flashers, which had never been in any of the other movies, but we'll leave the logic aside.
That's perfectly logical. What are you talking about, Justin? So let me guess, is somebody going to take over the world?
Yes, there's a weapon of infinite destruction. It's in the right hand, it's in the wrong hand. People don't know what it is. There's schemes to get it back. They fail, they succeed. The men in black come to the rescue with the women.
And there's also, and they keep referring to that in the film, which kind of seems as if it might become a bit tedious after a while. So we'll stop referring to it now as the fact that there is a woman as one of the main agents. But there's also a tiny little creature. What size is he? I don't know, but the size of a gerbil type of thing who gets up on the shoulders of Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson at various points. Who is he or who is it?
He's Pawnee, so he's a cheeky little chappy who's pledged allegiance to Agent M. He also is the main comic relief, so whenever there's a moment of moderate tension, he comes in with a quickie one-liner, and it really works.
And he's Pawnee, and this is another running gag, I think, Pawnee Pawn, because he's a pawn in the hands of the big players.
Yes, and he pledges allegiance to his queen without really too much kind of enjoyment of that.
The Queen being Tessa Thompson.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, here's the moment where that allegiance is pledged. Chris Hemsworth as Agent H, Tessa Thompson as Agent M, and it's Kumail Nanjiani who is giving us the voice of Pawnee Pawn.
What happened here?
We had the best party. Kanye showed up and dropped like a whole new album.
Look around. We got our asses kicked. My queen.
I'll never serve another. I must end my own life in the most painful way possible.
I don't think that she would want you to, you know.
Who are you to know what a queen would or wouldn't want? Are you a queen?
Well, I mean, to the extent that all women are, yes. But no, no, I'm not a queen.
You know what she is, though, is an agent.
Is that a title?
It is a title.
But maybe the best way to honor the dead is to go on living.
Yes.
I pledge loyalty eternal to you, Agent M.
No, no, no. I'm not interested in a subject.
Too late. It's done. I already pledged the loyalty. I wish you'd said no, no, no before. And if you should die before I promise to end my own life
in the most painful way possible.
Yeah, ha. I don't like you.
And there we have Kumail Nanjiani as the voice of Pawnee, and we also heard Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson as Agents H and M, respectively. Also, while we were listening there, my producer, Olma Gunn, quite rightly pointed out to us, Linda Fiorentini became a woman in black at the end of Men in Black 1. So, in fact, it's just now that they're suddenly thinking they have to refer to this fact, even though it was there from the end of film number one. I guess, you know, you don't want to be looking for gritty realism when you're going to a Men in Black film. So does it entertain on the level of what it's doing? You know, you got to save the world, Men in Black, off you go and do it.
Yeah, it ticks every box in the sense where it's not reinventing the wheel as a Hollywood film. It is enjoyable. It's fast-paced. There's humour in it. There's action in it. You're not necessarily going to be disappointed. Like, it is the fourth film in a tiring franchise that started out very strong. It's hard to keep the momentum going. So as long as you're aware of that, you're not really going to be disappointed.
Yeah, but you might, when you see a cast list that includes Emma Thompson, Chris Hemsworth, you know, Tessa Thompson, Rebecca Ferguson, Liam Neeson, you know, and Rafe Spall, I think, is there as well, isn't he? And Kamal Nanjiani, who's her there. You might expect at least that these actors will light up the screen. Do they manage to do that?
They start really, really slowly. The first half, the banter doesn't work. There's no chemistry. It definitely picks up a little bit, that banter and relationship. But I think everyone just feels like they've just taken all the best elements of 1, 2, and 3, put them in a pot and stirred them together with no sense of whether it's really going to work and come together. Almost like they didn't understand why the first ones were successful.
And F. Gary Gary, the director here, is asking us to watch this for an hour and 55 minutes. Does it wear thin or does it entertain for that long for you, Gemma?
I did think it picked up once it understood what it was. Like, the whole section where they go into Molly's history in the beginning almost wasn't necessary. It took away. It only really started once she joined the Men in Black. So it was like there was an erroneous first chapter at the beginning. And from that, it took a while to get going. It was gag. But once you get into the characters and you accept it and there is a little bit of chemistry then between Chris and Tessa, it's fun. And it stays silly and there's lots of quips. Like, you're not going
to
hate it.
I know, but lots of reviews I read today referred to the French hip-hop dancers Les Twins. Do you remember this? That one? No, clearly didn't ring a bell with either of you two.
No,
there you go. must have caught some other reviewers' eyes.
From the villains, there was some pretty impressive moves going on. Two villains that they're chasing at the beginning of the film.
They can dance. Dancing villains.
Yeah, it was kind of like a dance karate jujitsu thing.
You both sound very tired from having watched this particular film. So are the stars going to buck up your spirits in any way?
No, not at all. I mean, I think this is really shameless. I think it's kind of shamelessly marketed at, if there are people with nostalgia for Men in Black, but kind of tweens and preteens and people who like the Avengers. I think that's who they want to come and see the movie.
Lots of people like the Avengers.
But I just don't think they pull it off. So I gave them 1 star because I did like the Avengers and because I can't give less than 1 star to a movie with Emma Thompson and Liam Neeson in it and go to sleep tonight.
Oh, dear. Gemma, I think you are in a better mood than that afterwards.
I am. I'm definitely going to give it 3 because Chris Hemsworth, just Chris Hemsworth, he's delightful to watch.
A lot of chest of Chris Hemsworth, I believe, on display
at various
points.
No one's going to complain. But it's light entertainment. It doesn't try to be something it's not. And it delivers.
All right, so 3 from you, but it's know what you're going to. If you have Men in Black nostalgia, go and get Men in Black out on. If you have Men in Black nostalgia and you're my age, go and get it out on video. If you can find a video shop, you might find it somewhere online.
Express Vision,
Okay, let's move on then to Diego Maradona, documentary about the Argentinian football megastar from director Asif Kapadia. Asif Kapadia comes to this with quite a back catalogue and quite a reputation. Justin.
Yeah, no, I mean, his 2010 Senna and 2015's Amy Winehouse. His technique is to take all this kind of personal behind the scenes footage, you know, home movies, photographs from their personal archives, and then do audio only interviews with the people who knew them in the case of Senna and Amy Winehouse. And the idea is that when you just put the recorder down on the table, you get a kind of more intimate conversation. People aren't looking at the camera and they're more open and forthcoming. And it works really, really well. I mean, Senna and Amy are amazing films. Of course, in this film, Diego Maradona is very much alive and he becomes the principal voice and he does not hold back. I mean, it's like sitting in a confession booth with him. He just tells you everything.
And he was on, Asif Kapadia was on with Maggie Doyle, who's sitting in for Ryan Turbury at the moment. He was on with her this morning and he was talking about this whole technique of audio interview. He was saying, you know, when you're just sitting opposite somebody with a microphone, eventually, and he speaks to them for hours on end.
Yeah.
Eventually they'll give you something, maybe in the last 15 minutes of a 5-hour interview, that is the actual gold. Did you feel that there was actual... Did you hear things about Diego Maradona here that you didn't know, or did you know much about Diego Maradona to start out with, John?
I knew absolutely nothing about him, and I was ashamed. I'm not a football fan at all going into this, but I knew I was in great hands with Asif. Yeah, it's an amazing technique. But I also think what he does, actually one of the things that's very interesting is he records in a dark room. He didn't want people to be conscious about what they're saying or about what they're thinking. And I thought that's a really fascinating technique that he has done that on occasion. But what he does as well is he makes sure to talk to everybody surrounding that person. And he said with Diego as well, he was such an unreliable character that he had to get.
And particularly his ex-wife. Claudia in particular, that was an important one for him to get.
Yeah.
The other thing is here, the amount of footage that existed is extraordinary, seemingly.
Yeah, over 500 hours. I mean, Diego, obviously, he taped everything, all the parties, all the decadence.
But there were some guys
training.
Like some producers had decided at an early stage, we're going to follow him doing everything. So all that footage existed. Again, Capelli was talking about this morning and how they went chasing that up. Not an easy task, but they got a lot of it eventually.
Yeah, and I mean, photos from inside, you know, organized crime family parties, which I imagine those photos are hard to come by.
Yeah, give us the, it's a very particular moment in the career of Maradona that we're speaking about here. He was in Naples at the time, playing for Napoli.
Yeah, no, he finishes up in Barcelona after starting this horrific fight in the Copa, the Spanish Cup, in front of King Juan Carlos and 100,000 fans. He kicks someone in the head and knocks them out. So they sell him to Naples. The rumor always was the money came from the Camorra, the organized crime family. He goes to Naples. They've almost been relegated, and he turns them into eventual UEFA Cup winners, almost single-handedly through force of will.
Nobody expected that he would go to Naples.
Unexpected. Naples was looked down upon in Italy, but the Italian league was the top league at the time.
Let's hear one of the voices that we hear quite a lot in the documentary, John Foote, an Italian historian, speaking about the choice of Maradona going to Naples.
Napoli seemed a very strange choice at that time for Maradona to make. Serie A was the richest, most powerful league in the world. All the best players came to Italy, particularly to the northern giants, Milan, Inter and Juventus. But Napoli, in its history, had won 2 cups. That was it. Never won the championship. It was not a successful team. It was not a team that was looking like being successful.
So there's Maradona going to Naples and everybody wondering why. Now, you're saying, Gemma, that you came to this with absolutely no knowledge of, or very little knowledge of Maradona and very little interest in football. So there's obviously a human story that's taken you through this that interested you.
Oh, massively. He is such a complex, self-destructive, madman and a genius at the same time. And he's one of the concepts that were put out there by one of his colleagues was very interesting, that he himself is a kind, honest man, but he's created this alter ego of Maradona to take over when things get tough.
Is this the guy who says, I like Diego, but I don't like Maradona?
No. Yeah. Yes, and you can see that because, I mean, he's under so much pressure. The things start to take a turn. Napoli rely on him to, they won't let him leave when he wants to finish out his career somewhere quieter. He's trapped there. They think he's a god. They keep reaching out and touching him, and it becomes so much pressure that he self-destructs.
Yeah,
then this mad alter ego takes over.
And the other part of that, you know, he's been made offers that he can't refuse, I think, because this organized crime family.
Yeah.
How much of that story do we get, and how frightening is that?
No, we
part
get a lot
of the story.
It's incredibly terrifying. The Camorras, he tried a little cocaine, and they start giving him a little, and he started to do more and more cocaine. And basically, he would finish at the match on Sunday and do cocaine till Wednesday, and then he would do this insane training routine to detox for Sunday. But there was one moment when they came and grabbed him in the middle of the night, made all his family come. He didn't know what was going on. He's terrified for his kids, and they pull around the corner, and it's a party for him being thrown by the crime family. But the photos from it, the expression on his face, like he's clearly just terrified and can't escape this world he's now in.
And what about the Hand of God incident, the famous, the quarterfinals, wasn't it?
Yeah, against...
against England in what World Cup was that?
That's 86.
86, yeah.
But that was, it's a great example because one of the people who were interviewed, I think it might be John Foote, says that that was him in a nutshell because the Hand of God is kind of the cheat and the cocaine user. But then the second goal, when he basically ran through the defence by himself to score it, was the genius. And in that one game, you kind of saw Diego and Maradona.
Did you come away liking Maradona from all of this, or is that too simplistic a question? Is it the complexity of the man was what you came away with, Gemma?
Ugh, I really did not like him. I thought he's such an unlikable character, but I admired him and I thought he was a genius. Like, I didn't even know things about football, and I am now in awe of him, of his ability to turn things around and get things on track. And he was so charismatic.
And he was coming from a situation like a very, very poor part of Argentina, wasn't he?
Oh, the poorest of the poor, yeah. His vow was to never go back. So, I mean, that's one of the pressures on Diego, is that at 16, he's the breadwinner. Three sisters, mum and dad. It's all on him, you know, for the rest of their lives, like on him to do that. And that's part of the pressure.
And is there a moment too where he phones his mother after some huge win that I'm told is incredibly emotive? Yeah, you're nodding, almost not able to talk about
but
it, Gemma,
so
are you?
It's so sweet, though. Like, he keeps his family in his life. He really idolises his mother. And then even, I think, Asif gets to the crux of all the interpersonal relationships. And he even understands things about how, you know, his mother was jealous of his relationship with Claudia, and how, you know, his face changes when he lies and things. And I just think that's an amazing knowledge of a subject to
do. So Asif Kapadia has done it again. And he sees this as part of a trilogy, the hugely talented young person who then become something
and unlike Gemma, I thought I knew a lot about the story, but I only knew the headlines. What was behind them is really quite remarkable.
And that's what you get in this documentary.
Yeah, whether you know a lot or a little, it's amazing.
So
it
doesn't matter, you need to know nothing or you can know loads, you're still going to get more.
Yeah.
So stars from you on this one, Gemma?
Oh, 4.5.
And what's the 0.5 missing?
The point, because it's about football. I'm not a huge fan.
Okay,
there's
that's
a lot
reasonable.
Of football in it, but even still, I
enjoyed stuck.
Watching England lose.
Well, you're only deducting a half for that. What are you saying, Justin?
Yeah, I'm going to say 4.5 stars. It would be unbelievable if it weren't true. And I can't say why I took a half star away. There's a little thing they resolve at the end that I really thought needed a bit more depth that I don't want to
spoil. Right, okay. So there's a resolution of something.
There's
at the
just
end
a little thing
that annoyed you slightly during the film. Okay,
I thought they dropped the ball a little bit,
tiny
time.
They dropped the ball. There you go.
Handed it in that.
So 4.5 for Diego Maradona. 2 4.5s there from both Gemma and Justin. Let's move on then to our final film, We the Animals. Story of three brothers we're talking about this time. Very difficult circumstances. Who are the three brothers? Where are they? What are the difficult circumstances, Gemma?
So Jonah is a young boy and he has two older brothers, and they're growing up in upstate New York in quite a poor family. Now, Jonah is a very imaginative child. He disappears into his own imagination. Mm. He loves drawing under his bed at night, and him and his brothers, they kind of help each other survive because their parents, Matt and Pops, have a really, really, really toxic relationship. They really struggle, but they're there and beginning to support themselves. And this changes as the boys start to grow up and see more and understand more
of the relation of their parents' relationship. Okay, let's listen to a clip. Rosado plays the part of Jonah, and he's speaking with his mum in this scene. His two brothers swim, he doesn't, and Ma, played by Sheila Vaughan, is wondering why.
You went so far. Is that scary? I'll never let anything happen to you. You grow up with all these lakes and rivers. You got two brothers that swim like a couple of goldfish. How come you don't swim?
You don't know how to swim either.
Yeah, well, no one ever swam in Brooklyn.
And what Pop learned how to swim?
I don't know.
And that's Ivan Rosado as Jonah, and the mother character there, played by Sheila Vand in the film We the Animals. We the Animals is a kind of a dodgy enough title. Are they referring to the feral nature of these children? Yeah. And is it a problematic title, or is it a good description?
It is a good description because they're wild. They're, you know, at times their parents aren't there to guide them, and they do lose the plot because you like that. They'll shout, they'll scream, they'll bang things, they'll wreck stuff. Mm. They're three lads that are acting out.
They're wild young fellas. And lots of stuff I've reading about this was saying that, in fact, it's Jonah, it's the character of Jonah, it's this young fella, Evan Rosado, who actually who's bringing us through the movie. It's from his perspective, effectively.
Yeah, there's a little shift at the beginning. At the beginning, all the boys, the three of them, are always together in these kind of beautifully framed three shots, often kind of shirtless, and done as silhouettes. You're not always sure which boy is which at times, and they kind of all sleep together, all intertwined, you know, with their arms and legs, so they really are kind of like one, and the movie is about them coming apart, and as they come apart, we take on Jonah's kind of point of view.
This sounds like one that you'd want to be in the full of your health to watch. Emotively, is it emotionally difficult to keep your eyes on?
It is, but it's also very slow-paced and very beautiful and poetic. I actually didn't find it that much of a struggle. Mm. Even the violence and the stressful nature of things, it's handled in a very caring, empathetic way, even against the parents who, you know, in other hands would be painted as just pure demons.
Jeremiah Zager, the director here, I've seen comparisons to The Tree of Life from Terrence Malick. Are we in the similar territory, or do you think that's too much, Justin?
No, I mean, he does the visual poetics, and he definitely uses the kind of poetic voiceover of Jonah, kind of using language maybe a bit beyond his age to kind of float in these thoughts and ideas that he's sort of beginning to formulate. So that's definitely there. And then there's also this animation that takes over, and this a bit of magic realism that comes in as well, which probably drifts a bit away from Malick, but definitely the voiceover and the poetry and the visual poetry.
Has that sense. Yeah, it sounds as if you enjoyed this one. Stars?
Oh, 4 stars. I mean, the score's a bit overdone in places, and sometimes the magic realism gets you, but it's just beautiful to watch. Like, it's it's not too harrowing like some films are. I thought it was going to be a lot more harrowing than it was, but childlike perspective just keeps you loving the parents anyway, and it's kind of beautiful for them.
Gemma?
It's an indie film, and as long as you're not expecting fast-paced three-act structures and
you'll be happy.
You'll be okay. I'll give it 4 in that instance as well. It's beautiful.
Yeah, pretty even Stevens then, apart from the first film. There you go. Justin McGregor and Gemma Cray there speaking to us about Men in Black International and Diego Maradona. Both of those are on general release, while We the Animals is on limited release. So to